What up, guys? Welcome to the New American Dream Podcast. I'm your host, George Gibson. All righty. We're back with another. This is, I ain't going to say great episode. This is one of the best episodes we recorded recently because he dived in on our capabilities as human beings. And when I say that, I look at my own personal life, and currently what I'm doing is I doubted my potential. I'm gonna be honest. I didn't realize what I have accomplished, that I could accomplish that. Also, thinking small, you know, you think, me personally, I look at what my parents, what my family, what my peers do and what they did. And that's what I set my goals to. But you have to take the cap off the lid. Think big, because if you aim to make $10 million this year and you only make $1 million, guess what? You still did a lot better than most people. So thinking big, scaling big, any vision you have, instead of just thinking about in a small way, I want you to look at it. How can I scale this fast and big? And but most important, it has to be organic and profitable. You know, don't go big and not have profits. And that's what I'm learning right now. You know, I will only do deals. Like, for instance, before we get into the show, my real estate deals the past 4 years that I've been doing has been like, you know, no brainers, buy this deal, it's a home run deal. So now that the market has changed, I am passing up on a lot of deals that are not home run deals, but they're decent deal. Decent deal is a $10, $20, $30,000 flip. And for the average job, that's a great amount of money. But when you look at flips and people making $100,000 flips, you start to have these big visions. But making a $20,000 flip in 2 to 3 months is a great deal. So I'm learning it. I got to take more risks, scale big, and move fast, because everything you need to do is already in you. You just got to take action. So enough of me yip-yapping. We have on the show today, Indar Hawaii, one of the largest home flippers in Hawaii. Let's get it. Also, I got a surprise for you. New co-host Mike Nesler is joining on the show today. Check it out. Let's go. So welcome to the show, Indar.
Hello. How's it going?
Pretty good. So let the people know a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Hey, guys. Aloha. So my name's Indar Lang, Indar Hawaii, if you follow me on socials and all the great handles. We're the largest flippers here in Hawaii. We've done about 120 flips, about 130 million in flips. We nationwide wholesale. We have wholesaling going on nationwide. Not huge volume or so big numbers. We look for bigger wholesale amounts. And we have 7 flips going on across the U.S. And then here in Hawaii, we have 18 flips, about 30 million in flips going. Rental side of it all. Of 136 doors, multifamily, a ton of rentals across the US, 25 here in Hawaii. Also Airbnbs, I have a 16 in Ohio and 6 here in Hawaii of Airbnbs. We also have a Turo, we throw in a car as well with it as well. Buying a shopping center and own some strip malls and stuff like that as well. So dabble in a lot of stuff.
Okay. So that's definitely, this is going to be a high level show today, hopefully. You're doing big things, but let's go back to the beginning. How was your life growing up as a kid?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I grew up on a pot farm. I'm from here, Big Island, local boy, born and raised. Parents grew weed for a living in Hilo. Generator, water catchment, very off the grid, very low key kind of lifestyle away from everybody. Yeah, I grew up, smoked weed, partied, grew up like a normal bad kid, I guess, back in the day. And went to college later on, got a degree in electrical engineering. Then I got a business degree. Later got a contractor's license. Life progressed as I grew out of that whole phase in life and so forth. And started flipping in 2013. And we flipped one or two the first year, wholesaled a few. Did 3-4 the next year, 4-5, you know, it's a slow progression as we progressed and progress into even to more. I have 14 other companies as well. I forgot to mention we have some affiliate marketing and construction companies and some other companies I do, but yeah.
Indoor, I was going to ask you, so when you were growing up, I know you said you were like kind of like partying, smoking weed. Was there like a part of your childhood that you're interested in making money like throughout it, or was it kind of like you strained up as you got older?
Yeah, I mean,
where it changed.
That's a great question. Obviously, yeah, as a kid, I had big goals. I actually used to write down my goals as a kid. I remember doing that. So I had a little journal. I would write down my goals. I always had that Ferrari, wanted to drive a Ferrari, want to make $1 million a year. For a while, that was my goal, to make $1 million a year. And then when I achieved that, I was like, man, my goals are too small. I feel like my goals are been too small. And now I have some pretty hefty, large goals just to push myself for more, you know. So yeah, as a kid, I want to make, be financially free, of course.
So you think your parents had anything to do with how hard you're going now as far as an entrepreneur, businessman? What were their occupation?
I want to say yes, in a sense. Both my parents owned their own businesses, so owning their own company would help, though. But parents got divorced, and that really kind of set me back. My mom and dad are great parents, of course. I love them, of course. But yes, they. I mean, I don't know. Your parents, do they really help you in a sense? It's all you. I mean, in this life, it's all you. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Yes, my parents want me to do well, and yes, everybody. But as we'll talk about here later on, it's all about me. It's all about my actions to get things done, and that's what separates, I think, successful people from less successful people. The more it's this, take more action. You know, we all have the same 24 hours a day. We all have the same genetic makeup of humans, and it's just who takes more action.
Okay. So I was going to say, all right, you say being successful. Were you in high school, your GPA, were you like a smart student, or are you just the type of person who just went through it, the motion?
No, 2.8, just getting by, smoking weed. High school is a blur. I was actually in the special ed for English the last year because my spelling is horrible. Super bad at spelling and grammar. Still am today. If you ever see my emails, I just hit send. I didn't even read it. I'm like, you guys, you can figure it out.
And look, hey, so all right, Mike is fresh out of college, right, Mike?
Yeah.
So that is perfect. So all right, he's saying he don't even pretty much, he just sent his emails, not even reading it. Yeah. Mike, you just left college. It's totally opposite, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I started my first job about 4 months ago in accounting. So
nice.
Right now, I have to send a lot of emails, and now I'm double checking them before I send anything to clients and stuff. Because I mean, I have all right grammar, but it's nothing to write home about.
Oh, I know that I spent 4 hours every morning on emails, man. You guys don't even know, and I don't even have time to. I just like send, like I got to get to the next email, and it's building back up. It's such a chore.
So do you think college is this day and time?
I think college is overrated, man. I got a degree in electrical engineering from college, and the only reason I think you go to college is one, to if you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a profession that's really, really worth it. But I think it's better to learn about business, about entrepreneurship. You can spend that same 4 years, even if you went to school like a construction guy, you're going to be a carpenter. You can be ahead of this being a carpenter for 4 years than, getting a degree at school. And I think our schooling system is definitely lacking teaching how to start a company, how to open a bank account, how to balance a checkbook and learn about profit and losses and taxes. They don't teach that stuff in school, and actually that's my new side vision in life, is I'm actually going to start some nonprofit education for kids on how to do some of those kind of stuff, how to open a company, start a company, open a bank account, get credit cards, the point of taxes and why we do, you know, I don't believe in having an 800 credit score. I believe in using your credit and leveraging debt and so forth.
Okay. So this is probably like a selfish question, Indar, but you no, high level thinking.
I love thinking.
Yeah. I'm in Florida, right? And we have a crisis. Like I'm selling properties for a guy on a bunch of rental properties. So the first option was to give the tenants the opportunity to buy the properties. So just like you said, a lot of people don't know about credit. So say the property worth $100,000, he was willing to sell it to the tenants for 75% because they own these properties for over 30 years. So they made his money. But not one tenant was able to purchase the property. And it's like, it's missing out, you know? And I'm trying to come up with a solution. Like here in Florida, where I'm at in Vero Beach,
they could do a DSCR type of loan. DSCR loans are really easy for the tenants to get. And it's basically saying it's a cash flowing property. So that would be one option, or have this creative financing. And we do a lot of creative financing deals. If you want to talk some high level, that's how we've been putting offers in right now. I just locked up it was a $9 million deal in Ohio. And I said, hey, seller, carry 25%, carry the down payment, and I'll get a loan for the bank. So it's creative financing can be a great structure of deals, especially with our market now. So that could be a point.
Yeah. So basically what I took from that, you told the seller to carry the down payment. So really it's more so about just finding great deals like that situation, right?
Well, it's making a deal work when no one else can figure it out. And I think that's a huge trick in this industry is as you're working that deal right there in Florida, is how to make this deal work when you have a ton of competitors in Florida. And I buy deals off the MLS all the time. And how can I make a deal work that no one else wants to figure it out? And that's the name of the game. We're buying problems and we're solving them. We're figuring out that, you know, we're buying some hard problems that people, you know, don't want to figure out, or they haven't jumped it through the hoops to figure it out.
Right.
You know?
So I was going to say, what did your first deal look like? I know you're probably going way back, but just given example of what your first deal looked like.
Well, technically how I tell everyone wants to learn how to start in this business. And I tell everyone, just go to the bank and get a bank loan. That's technically your first deal. I mean, I worked for my dad's construction company, and the bank gave me a $240,000 loan at the time. And I just bought a little condo in Hawaii. It's like the size of this room. It's tiny. $200,000 in Hawaii is like freaking tiny. But I got a bank loan and put 1% down, cost me $5,000. And I bought something and I lived it myself. I painted it and DIY'd it, did it all myself. I was 25 years old at the time. And that's all I can get. Lived in it for 2 years. But the coolest thing after 2 years is I sold it and I made $90,000. That was just by owning my own property, paying my own mortgage. And it taught me so much, because it taught me about escrow and buying a property and the process. And it just got my, like, I don't know, it just really my foot in the door. And then later on, my first deal, we wholesaled a few. I found something on Craigslist for $25,000, some land. I sold it for $35,000 on Craigslist, did nothing, just put it right back on Craigslist and made my $10,000. And then we did our first flip. We bought for $700,000 and scared crap. I was scared shitless. And we sold it for $1 million. But the moral of that story was that first flip is I partnered with somebody. I was super scared, didn't know what to do. And I partnered with somebody who just gave me that, kind of took away the risk factor. And that first flip was a pop my cherry kind of thing.
Gotcha.
It really was a game changer for me.
So I was going to ask you, what would you tell someone that, I know you're in a very like expensive market in Hawaii, and a lot of people might not want to invest in that market, but obviously you started and are still doing that. What would you tell someone that maybe they think they're in the the wrong place or there's not like opportunities around them?
That's such a good question, man. Because when I first started, there was so much naysayers. There's so much people saying, oh, you can't flip Hawaii. You can't scale this business in Hawaii. Our prices are too, price points are, you know, too great. And my mindset is somebody's going to do it. Somebody's going to do it. Might as well be me. You know, that's always been my mindset. My mindset is the most important of that conversation we were just sharing. Because later on in life, I used to tell myself, hey, I couldn't find any rental properties in Hawaii. Our price points were too high and I couldn't find any rental. And when my mindset says I can't find or I can't, yes, you're right. You can't find, you can't do it. You're right. You're 100%. But the second I changed my mindset later on about rentals, I started finding rentals, you know, a lot of attraction, karma, all that kind of stuff. The second your mind changes that you will. There are deals everywhere. There's a deal in every market. How we're talking right now with interest rates being so bad and all that, blah, blah, blah. As an investor, we're always buying because there's always deals. There's always deals wherever you are. And it's just your job to be creative in structuring the deals, to find them, finding off market, you know, figuring it out. I have a big office behind me of staff. And, that's our model, is to figure it out. You know, figure it out is our company model.
I would say right now, what is your one advantage over, like say it's 1,000 investors in the room, real estate investors. And what is like your one thing that you have advantage over everybody? It might not even be in real estate, but this is what you're strong and you're the best at.
I got some big balls, man, some big risk factors. I mitigate risk well. I analyze deals deeper risk factors than other people will take that risk on it. And I that's what a flip is high-end, luxury flips. Like I just bought a $2.7 million house and it's $800,000 rehab and we're selling it at $5 million. So the risk factor of that thing is very great. You know, that can go south fast, you know, can go bad fast or can go well very fast. So I mitigate these big risk by my profit on that deal. Like our profits will be over mil. So that risk is mitigated through profits. Or we're flipping across the US right now in some other states. And that risk is mitigated through having multiple exits. So we can wholesale a deal, wholetail a deal, or flip it. So making sure a deal has different exit strategies is super important for that type of risk. You know, so just understanding the risk of it all and being the expert on that.
I think if we would have had this conversation yesterday, because it was a tax deed auction where I'm at. And it was a piece of land, 0.30 acres on a corner lot. The neighborhood, the house is probably between $400,000 and $500,000. And I rode by, I know the lot, it's a lot down the street for sale for $70,000. And I'm like, all right, I probably could sell this quickly for like 50. So I want to go up to like 25,000.
Yeah.
So I put enough down to bid up to like 25. Mind you, this property, it ended up, the winning bid was $30,000. And I felt like, I felt sick to the stomach because on one end, it's like, do I want to risk, you know, putting my money out there, having it tied up? But at the same time, I feel like I lost $20,000 because I'm a realtor.
I think you lost 25. I would actually believe in you. And you know what you should do? You should find some, you should definitely have some more investors involved or just start putting it out there to the general people, what you do to find investors. And one, have investors kind of ready before, you know, you go. So you could have somebody who's got 50 grand to help you on that deal that you had yesterday. It would ease your mindset too, in a sense.
Yeah. And I could have did it too. It's just, like you said, I'm used to getting, I started buying properties maybe like 4 years ago. So the market was way different. I mean, every property I pretty much sold for like either double or triple what I paid for it. That's how crazy the market went here. So it's hard for me to do like base hits or a double. That's like a double I would consider, you know? Yeah. And I've been getting home runs up until this point. So it kind of got me spoiled, if you could say.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. You've been doing it for 4 years. That's great. You got a great market in Florida. Everyone's there right now.
Yeah, that's why I kind of sold everything, because it is a great market. Okay. So what are some strategies you're using to make offers now? You said creative financing. So a house on the MLS right now, it seems like everything's overpriced. What are negotiation tips people can use right now to try to even just get a decent deal?
So one is if you're a buyer and you're buying off the MLS, there's no tricks to it. It's a numbers game. It's putting in a lot of offers. So if we want a deal if we're hungry for deals, we put in 20, 30 offers a week on the MLS. You just submit it and forget it. You know, I've gotten deals 6 months later. Often I'll get a new investor who he'll look at a deal and like, oh, my offer is way too low of what they're asking on the MLS. Like, well, you just spent all that time analyzing the deal. You spent all that work figuring this deal out. Why not just submit it? Who cares? So yeah, I'm very conservative sometimes, and it's fine to be conservative, you know, obviously, but submit it, forget it is definitely my motto. I'm just trying to get to 21, man. 21 gets me one deal. So 21 offers gets me one deal.
Numbers game.
Numbers game. On these bigger deals now, when we find off the market, when you do kind of deals that you may not want,
right?
Or you're buying it at market value, nothing, no discounted price, then I'm doing the seller finance of 25% down. So what? I'm buying it, no discount, like I'm buying it at market, but I can get a loan for 75% and the seller's going to finance 25%. That's going to cost me nothing. It's like getting a free house.
But are you flipping it or are you renting it out?
That would be a rental. So then I would go and make sure it cash flows, make sure it follows. I have a 1% rule. It's an easy rule to follow. So making sure it just cash flows real quickly. I kind of look after the fact. You should do it before, but
on rentals, do you always make sure they're cash flow, or do you ever play like appreciation and you think it's going to?
I never, bank on appreciation. It's the old school way. My dad that's how my dad guys did it back in the day. They would bank on appreciation. That's too much risk for me. The deal has to cash flow from day one. And if it doesn't cash flow, it's going to be close to cash flowing if, you know, one, I have to put in some more tenants or whatever it may be. But yeah, I follow the 1% rule. It's a really great rule to analyze a rental really, really quick. And just to state it, so everyone out there and listening, is anything you buy, say it's $100,000, it needs to rent for $1,000. So you can just use that rule of thumb really quickly. If you're buying, you know, $200,000 house, you need to get it for $2,000 up rent, minus any maintenance fees as well if it's a condo. So it's just a cool trick rule of thumb, and I use it actually to even 100 units. Like I was just analyzing a 96 unit deal, and I broke it down into what one unit would cost and what one unit would rent for. It's just a quick rule of thumb. Obviously you dive in later on deeper, but generally if it meets that rule, everything else is going to work. It almost always works after that. So
okay.
It's kind of a easy rule that you can scale everything.
So I was going to say, outside of real estate, what's like, if you say you take a lot of risk, I know you had some failures that you learned from. Yeah. What's like a failure that you remember that you were like, I learned my lesson on that?
Yeah, good question. Failure's part of the business. Obviously, we don't want to have any failures. On my third flip ever, my ARV. So our on flips, ARVs is number one. What is this property worth? What is the valuation of this property? What can I sell it for? And I was new. My ARV was off. I was just using, this was 2015, actually. I was using a condo, and the condo had one other valuation of I think it was like 800,000 or something. One other unit sold at 800,000. Everything was at 600. And I was banking off of trying to sell at that one comp, and a combination of everything bad happened. I had removed the asbestos. We got hit with $30,000 of fines for doing so. Project sat for a long time and it didn't sell. A combination of just everything all in once, and I couldn't sell it. And I just got out under it, and I lost 80 grand. I lost 80,000 on that deal. It felt like a kick in the balls. I'm serious. It felt like you feel that in your gut, man. For a year, like you feel that gut for a long time. It's a really shitty feeling.
And that's something. I was looking at a property in North Carolina. I'm in Florida, but that was the one thing. It was like 2 acres, 140,000. Here in Florida, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, that's like an awesome deal. But I couldn't, that was like more in the rural area up in North Carolina. So I'm like, I don't know what it would, ARV would be. That was, I don't know. Yeah.
The rural stuff is definitely hard. And they can be longer sales too in the rural. Like, so your hold times could definitely change. When I took that loss, I still paid back all my investors, all contractors, everyone got paid. And I just moved forward. I could have been scared and ran and did something else. I have an engineering degree, so that's I could go back to that. But I kept moving forward and did another flip actually in the next month. I made 90 grand, so made up for it. And I've never looked back since, and been doing very well. We broke even on a few, but we've never had any big losses. The other learning experiences, I would say, is partnerships. I've had a few partnerships where I end up doing the whole damn job, and partners become, I don't know, partners disappear and start doing some weird shady shit sometimes. But
it's hard to find. Because they know they're partnered with somebody that's going to get it done so they can lack?
I think so. I think I take over too much. I don't know. Partners are, they always are great and they start out great, but when the shit hits the fan, that's when you see how a partnership develops into whatever it is. You know, when it's, things are going bad and, you know, whatever it may be, you know, money, normally money's involved. Will that partnership stand the test of time? Because this business, it's some ups and downs big time, and you got to figure out how to get through when there's no money or something like that. You know, there's been often times where I'm like, where's all the money, you know? And we didn't raise correctly on a deal or something when I was starting off.
Right. So what do you think, like, what's your why? What's your big, like, I always say this question. If God was to whisper in your ear, like, this is what I want you to do. Like, why are you here on earth? What do you think, like, what's your purpose? What's the big goal here?
So my vision is basically a vision of my business, and my company has dramatically changed. You know, it used to be the normal make $1 million a year, and kind of felt like that was a normal goal of everybody.
Right.
But now it's dramatically changed. And now we have a bigger vision of, my current vision is to be owning 150 million in property, to have 84,000 of passive income. So net passive income, meaning that's all cash flow net, meaning after everything. So that's $1 million a year. And then my flipping company making another $1 million a year, and then affiliate companies making another 500. So that's all great, and that's great money. But my overall vision is actually to build 5 generations of wealth. Making $1 million a year is great, but that don't mean crap. What's more important is your net worth and owning property and passing it on. That's generational. That's like wealth. Like, would you rather make $1 million a year, or would you rather own, have $1 million of income from a rental or so forth, you know? So I think generational wealth is more badass to me, you know,
and
five generations of that. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that's my goal. And then I have a side passion. I want to teach kids about how to start their own businesses and how to develop and so forth.
Okay. I was going to say, okay. So if you knew you only had maybe 100 or 1,000 weeks left to live, what would you do different in life? Like, you know, like some people get like this, you got 1,000 weeks left to do whatever you want to do, and that's it. The clock is out.
I spend every minute with my family, my kids. Right now my kids are my world. You know, that's, I can't answer any differently, but spend time with my kids. Once you have kids, you'll know.
I have a son. Yeah. That's kind of what made me even go hard. I worked.
Yeah.
I had my first son when I was 30. When he turned 1 year old, that was my last day at the post office. Like, that was it. I grinded that 1 year because I missed, in my head, I'm like, I'm going to miss his first steps. I'm going to miss everything because I was working 12 hours a day. So that most definitely is like the number one. Now I got another child that's like on the way. It's like, it definitely, it motivates you. Thank you. I think that's like the Kickstarter for any man. That's like a Kickstarter.
Definitely changes your whole goals and your structure of life and so forth. And
So what's your leadership style? Like, as far as you got a lot of employees, you work with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. What's your style?
First we hire smart, we hire right. I remember one of my first hires was look for a personal assistant, to have an executive assistant. And I was going through a lot of girls and I kept on going through all these girls and would hire them and went through five of them, you know, within a couple of years. And then somebody turned me on to the DIS test, personality test, to personality traits. So hiring, based upon personality traits was a game changer to me to help grow a business, to put the right people in the right position. Because often in an interview, everyone is a great person. Everyone's a super nice and everyone is good people. You know, that's going to come through the door, but is this the best skill set for them? You know, we have a person who is very task oriented. They love to complete tasks. You know, they're more better in an office, in an admin or a task oriented job. Compared to the guy who's a salesman, he's not going to want to sit at a desk and do task oriented stuff. So the personality traits really helped me scale the company and grow. And then my first hire was actually having a virtual assistant and so forth, and then getting executive assistant and project managers. It's hard. There's two different ways to hire. Either you hire all at once and you suffer for the first year, and that's actually a way to hire and build a company. You just hire the whole company and losing money. Or the other way, which normal people do, like I did, is you kind of hire and fill as you need. And it's like a catch 22. Like, you don't want to give the money, you know, you're going to lose money. And it's like that's going to cost me, but it's hard to scale and grow. I go through a mastermind with a lot of high-end people, and everyone's same problems: how to scale, what to pay, how to grow. You know, it's definitely it's not an easy process for sure.
So, speaking of growth, since you're an engineer previously, when did you know that it was time, where you felt like it was the right time to transition and go full into real estate?
That's funny, because I was fired. And I think everyone should take that same model. I was trying to juggle both. I was actually flipping and running, working for my old company. And I was trying to do both. I was flipping at night and answering phones and trying to do my full-time job. And I've already done probably three or four flips at the time. Was just trying to do both. And I think you should do it until you're forced to not, because it's nice to have the W-2 income. You know, it's nice to get paid every Friday. It's nice to know you're going to be able to have income, because on a flip or these type of investments, stuff we do, we generally, you know, a flip, it may take me 9 months before I even see a paycheck. Or, you know, if you're wholesaling, it may take you a while before you actually get, you know, a deal. It takes 30 days, 45 days to close a wholesale deal. So until you're forced to, until you're fired, then you.
And you know why he asked that question, right?
Why? Because he's got his accounting job. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would do it until you're forced to, man. I would try to juggle it both and suffer, man. Do those late. I did late nights at 7 till 10 o'clock at night, analyzing deals and writing to agents offers, you know, when I got home. And I would have to until one offsets the other, obviously, you know. And that's where the grind comes in right there. That's the word grind. That's what it is right then and there.
You know, when I felt, because I was a mailman and I was feeling just like Mike, just saying like win the moment, because I was scared. I had bills. And I think the one guy, I did one deal and he told me, man, George, when you put 2 feet in real estate, that's when you're going to see elevation. And I was in the mail truck and I'm on the phone half of the time trying to do real estate because I was a realtor. And I realized like they having meetings. I'm not thinking about no mail. I'm thinking about real estate. And I was like, you know what? I had did a house hack and that was like the lifesaver because I had no living expense, you know?
Yeah.
So once I quit, it took time, but I think I'm 33, so it's 3 years ago. It take a little time to catch traction because literally when I quit, I was looking for another job. That's how scared I was, you know? But
yeah, it's hard, man. Real estate's not an easy start and it's a long road to success.
Definitely now though, because I think it's popular. Like with social media, people like to say, I'm a real estate investor. Like, I guess it's cool now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I started, I like was ashamed to say I flipped houses because it was such a bad word. Flipping is I was ashamed to actually say it.
I always think about that. Like everyone, when you buy something and then you sell it for more, people sometimes give you a tough time, but it's like, that's what everyone does in America. Mm-hmm. They buy stuff for lower and sell for more. So.
Yeah. It's the biggest commodity that you can mark up. You know, we buy this pen from China for, I don't know, 90 cents and sell it for $5. But a house we can mark up a lot more to sell it, at market. We don't sell it over. We sell it what supply and demand dictates, just like anything. Just like we sell it for what people pay for it. We don't sell it for what somebody won't pay for it, so.
So, and the one thing I do like by looking at your social media, and this is crazy because me and Mike, we met down in Fort Lauderdale I don't know if you heard of Ben Mala. You ever heard of him?
Mm-mm. He's a yes, I do. Yeah, Big Ben. Yeah, that big guy. Yeah.
So he had a real estate event in Fort Lauderdale, and that's basically, that was probably what, like, how long ago, Mike? That was like 3 or 4 weeks ago? A
couple weeks. Yeah. Probably so, a month
ago. Yeah, it was about a month ago, but that's where I met Mike at. And I don't even go to real estate events that much, but see, I met somebody like-minded, but what do you around a lot of high level people, what are some things that they help you with and like the benefits of doing, being around that type of people?
Yeah. Well, I'm a little off subject. So the social media side you're looking at is just grown now. I'm a huge believer of not doing social media at first. It's to focus on your business, to grow your business, to grow, find deals, wholesale, like to market and do that side of your business and make money there, and then put your attention to social media, because social media takes so much away from your business and it's a full-time job to succeed at it. I mean, I have somebody doing it full-time for me now, so I would definitely say to people get so caught up in to grow their social media, which is great, and you could definitely find a deal here or there off of it. Grow the business, but I pay to be around some high level people. I just came back from Maui Mastermind with Brandon Turner and Taro, and some really that you had to be a millionaire, you had to be a big kind of dog investor to get invited to this, right? It was invited only, and then you had to pay a ton of money. I think it was like $8,000 and hotels and flights and rental cars, and it's probably $15,000, $20,000 with food and everything.
Yeah. So that's what I'm trying to get to. All right. That's a lot of money, right? So how does the value come back? Like, I know you can't tell us all the secrets, but even the event we went to, it was like $200. But
yeah,
learned a lot there, learned a lot. Being around people, my same energy is what I really enjoy. But what's something, you get from it?
Well, the biggest thing I think I get from those kind of events, one, the network, of course, the network I'm around. Now I'm around some high level people that we can share our struggles with. We're sharing, even at a normal real estate event, you're around like-minded people that you can share what you're working on, share your struggles. So just being around the people and opening up to them. So at that event, I opened up and I shared my struggles and what I need to help with and so forth. And two, that was more of an education type of event where we did a lot of journaling and working on our business and so forth. And that's the do part of it all. So I have three categories. I have books, YouTubes, and podcasts and all that. That's just education and learning, you know, of course. We have doing is when you start doing some, like, you know, writing stuff down. And then the last part of it all is action. So action. Education, do, and action. So action is what it all boils down to. We can go spend... I have a buddy who spends hundreds of thousands on all these different networking events and masterminds and educations from all the gurus. But if you don't take the time to put in action, you don't take the time even just to do the program, put the action, it's all pointless, you know? So it's definitely, it's taking that and now putting the action, you know, action steps. Yeah. I'll sit here and tell you 99% of how to flip a house. I'll break it down one by step by step. But if you don't take that action, it was all pointless, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess I'm going to ask, when you started out and you're doing partnerships, how did you show your value to other people that may, you know, you might have not had financial resources as much sure. as they did, but you brought some sort of value to the table?
I just outworked. I did everything. I outworked them. I did everything. And then if you were to partner with somebody who's a lot bigger than you, you know, be the fly in the wall, you know, what can I do? And take it and run with it. Or I just took initiative, I guess would be that word to use. But, you know, whatever needed to be done, I just took care of it and I got it done. And just be that guy that I'd rather be the guy who does more than the guy who does less in that partnership, in case whatever happens. Or I don't know if it's right or wrong, but that way I'm not dependent. You know, I don't want to depend on anyone ultimately at the very end of it all, in case, you know, it goes bad. But you can bring, if you have a deal and you're scared of doing it, I would partner with somebody, you know, making zero, not doing the deal, or JVing and make 50% is a lot more. You know, I partner with people all the time, and it makes it a lot easier to partner with people as well. So it's definitely easier sometimes too.
Yeah, I did deals with an uncle, and then I got a friend, me and him partner on deals. But I have people come up to me before, and they like, George, I want you to do all the work, and I'm putting the money up. And it's like, you know, it's just, I don't know. I don't want to lose that money, first of all, because it's my money. I can live with it. And second, I just got to figure out that right partnership, you know?
Yeah. Well, if the deal makes sense and like it's a, you know, $2 million deal and you're trying to fund it and you have, you know, that your partner who will help fund a deal, then I'll do partnerships. And I'm actually the other way around. I'm the guy that normally funds the deals and I have partners. But, you know, if again, you, if that's your only option, then you take it, you know, and it allows you to do more too. So,
got you. So you think, for people who doing real estate, like, what's the like, if you go from making, say you're making $250,000 a year to $1 million a year, what's like that biggest difference that you've seen
to scale up? One, the mindset that you can scale, and two, big recognizing your time suck in your head, and that's a big thing to recognize, is what are you thinking about all day? Is that the best use of your time? Like, for example, I have some really struggling with permitting troubles on some bunch of rehabs right now, and I have some Ohio properties are just like in my head sucking time, energy away from me, growing and scaling, not allowing me to think. So your time, in the sense of your time in your head, your time to the freedom to think, would change all that. So having, you know, getting rid of the stuff that's really bogging you down, and, you know, and just passing that off to a partner, a friend, selling them whatever that time suck would be. So your head can focus on doing more and scaling. Cause we can, if you had the time, all three of us right now, to think in great ideas and great, we could freaking brainstorm galore. Like, it's not rocket science, Abel, but
okay. I was gonna say, you probably read it, Indar, but Mike, I want you to order this on Amazon if you haven't. It's a book called Robin Robin Sharma, The 5 a.m. Club, I believe. Have y'all read that book?
I never did.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
I read that book maybe like 2 to 3 months ago. And I literally, when I started implementing what the book was actually saying, I could see a difference. And the whole thing at the 5 a.m. Club is about getting up at 5 o'clock and getting more done than the average person do by 8 o'clock. So when I was doing it, I kind of fell off. I've been moving around, so I did it much. But when I was getting up at 5 o'clock, working out, you know, writing down, like you said, what I need to do, editing these podcasts and YouTube videos, by 8 o'clock, I could focus on the problems that come my way.
Yeah.
Like everything for me personally be done. And it was like, man. And if you do that, like Kobe Bryant said, if you do that for like 5 years, basically, no matter what people do, it's not possible for them to catch up to where you're at.
Yeah, because you just gained so much more time in the day. And I'm, when I was more on growing my company, I was waking up early. I would spend more late nights too, doing more. Now I'm a little different on my morning schedules. I'm more involved with the kids in the morning. But yeah, just freeing up your time as well as delegating the things that you shouldn't be doing as well. Like going to Home Depot 5 times a day because you're doing a flip. You're thinking you're saving money by going Home Depot. And really you can hire that task out and delegate your time better, which will allow you to look for more deals, allow you to find money, allow you to scale, you know? So that was a big one too, you know?
And the most important, from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock, nobody called me. My son, it's a big thing, man. Cause think about it, right now, you look at your phone, you probably got notifications, but that time in the morning, nobody's up, you know, and it's definitely a good book, but
that was cool.
All right. So Mike, you got any questions before we go into like the final questions?
Yeah, not right now. No, you can keep going.
Ask them real questions. I'll answer you any tricks and hustles or what side of the actions. I'll tell you the secrets of how.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, if you're starting out like all over again, would you approach it differently, buying your first property and living in it, or is there a different way you would go about it?
No, I think definitely that was the first way because you're utilizing free money, bank money. That's what we do in this business. In this business of life, I guess, growing is leveraging money. We find money from banks, from private investors, from our money, whatever it is, and we leverage it to do more. You know, a normal job, we trade our time for money, right? You know, we work 8 hours at, I don't know, $20, $30 an hour, whatever it is. You know, now we're using leveraging money. We're getting a loan from the bank, hard money loan, even an FHA loan. We're leveraging money to leverage it to do more, to buy a property, sell it wholesale, whatever, flip it. So I would say I would find way more money to leverage. And that's ultimately what I do now is I find more investors so we can leverage money together to make it work and do more. You know, that's the name of the dream. Trump and all these big guys, they just have a lot more money they can leverage. And, you know, you can do a lot more when you learn to leverage.
Yeah. And I realized, like, when I got my taxes done this last year, and the tax person, most of my income came from selling homes. And I spent a lot of time doing other things. And that's what I realized. Like, you can be busy, but what's actually making the score go up, you know?
Next part is now you got to learn how to not pay taxes.
<That's> right.
That's the next part, legally.
Legally, right. But but I feel like a lot of people are busy, but like I got a moving business and we can do 1,000 pickup and moving jobs. But when I sell a house, it's a difference. Like it really, and I be trying to explain to people, like no matter how many hours I work at the post office, it doesn't matter what you work, like flipping houses have seemed to been like the biggest factor to my success, you know?
It is definitely the house, real estate in general. So I'm a private, I'm at this club, Outrigger Canoe Club. It's high net worth people, private club. to get into. And everyone that are millionaires, they're very successful. Either they did real estate in life to get to where they're at success now, or they did whatever else and they have real estate as part of their portfolio. And so real estate in general has just got to be a part of your life to whatever, you know, you want to do, I think. It just got to be.
Gotcha. All right. So this is like the final questions that I ask everybody. It is the first thing that come to your head. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. If you could, before I get into that, I did have one question. Mm-hmm. Brandon Turner, I talked to him before. He responds on Instagram, which I used to be surprised. But what is something like, you know, you've been around him in person. I talked to him, you know, like on this before. But what is something, because he really, when he was doing the podcast, that's really what got my motor. Like, I believe what he was saying. You know, you got a way of delivering what he's saying to make it seem achievable for everybody. So what are like some things people won't know about Brandon Turner from just, you know, being like, we see him on the internet, but being around him in person, what is something to make him different?
I think he's such a just generally like real human being. So I was over there last weekend with him. Actually got to see Hal Elrod, another beast guy. Yeah. There's this other guy who's got on a TV show, but Brandon is just like one of the guys. He's just one of personable, like just like your friend that you would be hanging around with. He didn't have that higher than or better than, you know, he was just, you know, just there kicking it and cruising, just talk story about anything. As soon as you, you know, get that, you can't relate to him away from yourself, you know, he's just, you know, talk about kids, talk about life. And all these people are just normal human beings that you would, I met Ken McMore. He was a beast too. And he was just, you know, normal guy, just talk story. And it's the second, it's very hard sometimes when you meet some people you look up to,
right,
that you are very starstruck and, you know, you want to ask them how they did business or you want to talk business. But instead, I just talk to them like a normal human being, and they appreciate you better and I appreciate them better as a real person. And then you build real relationships with people, you know, more so meaningful relationships. I call Brandon my friend and all these people my friend because I'm real with them. I share my struggles and I hear they're about their life and kids and family, and you know, we all have a real personality to us. So
yeah, you know what it is, I think, because I don't know, for a long time I never knew any millionaires in real life. When I started doing this podcast, I started meeting different people, and I'm like, I tell my wife, I know quite a few millionaires now, you know, just from social media, though, not in my personal life. On my daily life, I don't know no millionaires, you know. So that's why I asked that.
I try to be around those millionaires. I hang around them and I talk story and I pick their brains and just hang around with them because they're always coming up with some cool ideas. And millionaires have a different take on life. Side story here. When I was first starting out, I didn't have any millionaire friends too. I have a mentor that was like a friend to me. And I remember a cool story he told me. The average person will have, I don't know, $40,000 saved in the bank account. And what we're taught to, we want a brand new car, and we're taught to go take that 40 grand and buy a brand new car. You know, that's what society teaches us. He said, no, you got to think different. Think out of the box. Take that 40 grand, go buy a $200,000 rental property. That's your down payment for that rental property. Now that rental property is cash producing $400 a month. Now that $400 a month, you can go lease a car. So now you have a, you know, rental property that's going up in value. It's cash flowing. You have a leased car, brand new, nicer car, you know, instead of losing, because you lose money when you buy a car, right?
Right.
So that just that different mindset of millionaires constantly make me change my mindset to think differently.
All right.
And here's another example. Sorry. I have my friend who was bitching about name. So somebody was bitching about gas prices and how gas prices are, you know, going up. we can't control gas prices. There's none of us here. We can do anything about gas prices. We can bitch about it. Right. Or you can take that same time and energy that you're bitching about gas prices and go make more money. And then if you just make more money, you're not bitching about it. You go make $1,000 more a month. So what if gas prices go up? So just that, being around people like that, that change how you think.
Yeah, it's definitely, I got to get around more people like that. I hear about gas prices every day.
Still make more money.
Well, you know,
my buddy's selling a company for $45 million. And he was bitching about something. I just told him, just go make more money. And he all day, it just wedged him. He's selling his company for $45 million. He's bitching about $100.
But and my thing is, like, I was at the post office. I was mailman. I didn't work no overtime. I'm not working. When that clock hit 40 hours, I'm out the door. So I made the least amount of money at the job. All my buddies, they work 60, 50 hours a week. But the difference, I was never a high earner, but I didn't have no expenses. First thing people do when they got a job at the post office, get a car, $400 payment. It was like the supervisor be looking out the window. Soon they see it, like, yes, now you got to work for me for a long time. So I didn't have a car payment. Once I discovered Bigger Pockets, I literally sold my house and bought a house with a guest house. So now I got no
car. I loved how you house hacked. That's so great how you house
hacked. Yeah, the house hack is what I had no house. My house was paying me to live there. I was Airbnb out of the suite, and it literally was more than my house payment. So that was like game changer. But I never made a lot of money, you know, and people thought, well, you make a lot of money. You were, no, I don't. You probably make more than me. You know, it was just what you were spending your money on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's how smart you are with it. And, you know, do you buy, my buddy teased me the other day that I bought my wife just a Chanel watch, which is nice. It's great. But I didn't buy a Rolex. And he told me, oh, you didn't buy a Rolex. I was like, well, I bought her a house instead. So what do you spend your money on? You buy a Rolex or you go buy a house instead. So, you know.
So oh, man, that's funny. I like to come home that. I come home a lot of times. I tell my wife, I sold a house today. And she just looked like I bought a bike or something. Like, sold a house. You know? It's freaking cool, it's starting to get normal. But, yeah. So, I did want to say this. Mike, have you did a deal yet?
No. So, I just got pre-qualified. And then now I'm getting pre-approved. So America has a first-time home buyer program. So they're going to pay, I think, $7,500 towards my closing and up to $10,000 if I buy in a low foot traffic area, I think it's considered. But so I've been checking out houses on the MLS. So now I'm like ready to start putting in some offers.
Just put in offers and don't be scared to put in offers. The coolest thing about real estate compared to stocks or something is we have an option period. You get that property under contract, you have an inspection period, a J-1, whatever your state is, you have an inspection period. So you can always get out of that contract. You can lower the price if you were off on something. So just put offers in. Don't be scared because you can get out of the contract very easily in the first week or two. It's really just put them out there and buy something now. Don't worry about interest rates. You can refinance later. You can figure it out later. I would suggest buy something now, live in it, sell it or refinance it and rent it out. And then you can use that same FHA loan and buy another house. You know, you can do play the long-term life goals of owning a rental properties and buy that first house. And use refinance, get rid of that loan. You can reuse that loan again. Are you military by chance, VA? No.
So this program's conventional, but it's 3% down in certain areas. So the PMI like will fall off after I get 20% equity. But also I have my license in New Jersey, so I'm going to use that. So I'm hoping to get into it for like basically nothing.
Use your license. Yeah. Do it, man, and just buy something. Don't be scared. Don't be too picky. Real estate is just the best thing ever to buy and keeps on going up.
So how long are we going to give them? 30 days, 60 days, 90 days?
Hey, look, you deposited some money in my bank account because I had it say in cash. They said I had to have it in there for two, 60 days.
Yeah, oh. They want to see you have enough in your bank account at the end of the month. They want the end of the month account. So you have 2 days to make sure to
have all of her brokerage.
Yeah. Tell your mom you want to buy $5,000 just to put in an account for one day and then take it out. Because right. They just want money at end of the month. I don't know why, but it's how they look at it.
That's good. So I think Mike finna buy property soon. If you're gonna do this podcast, we gotta get a deal done, right? All right. So these like last five questions. First thing to come to your mind, just shoot it off. All right. If you could spend a day with anybody in the world, mentor anybody, who would it be?
Mentor anybody, who would it be? Barry Schwitzner. He's the beast of this game. I don't know if many people know him. He birded the Cosmopolitan Hotel. Guy owns like Marriott Hotels. The guy's a fucking beast in the real estate business. People look up to some people, but these guys are behind the scenes. You don't even know these guys. Yeah. They're not even on social.
Does he just do hotels or all real estate?
He owns like a mortgage company. He's beyond this guy. He owns Marriott Hotels. He owns the Cosmopolitan. He birded it, in Vegas. The guy owns, has funds. He's a billionaire.
Okay.
I like to talk to those guys.
Gotcha.
All right. Question two. Favorite book that helped your success?
The cliche is Rich Dad Poor Dad, of course, when you're young. So everyone should read that. My new favorite book now is The Goal. The Goal was a great book for me. It's to scale your business too. It helps. It talks about what is your goal and then figuring out what's the bottlenecks to your goal. It's my number one. Some outside books. I love The Secret, that movie. I'm very into spirituality stuff and that kind of stuff. So I can say all the cliche books everyone says, but
I was gonna say, lately I've been like addicted to reading books in my free time now, right?
Yeah, and that's awesome.
They all kind of say the same, but I don't want to say you got to do exactly what the books say. It seemed like I'm just getting a lot of information and then I'm building my own brain,
Yeah, applying it all. It's hard because books just fill so much information. It's like you want to do it all right away, and
right.
Then you get
everybody lost. Got their own way of doing things. So now instead of me like reading a book and like I'm gonna follow him, I think I just take it for what it is.
Yeah.
Animal. If you had to say a spiritual animal that represented your personality, what animal would it be?
I love the ocean. I paddle between islands, so I would say a shark. probably a shark. I just love the ocean, and the shark's the beast of the ocean.
Sharks. It's strike.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So you surf or you do like paddleboarding?
I grew up surfing, yeah. I paddle between islands on a one-man canoe, stand-up paddle, spearfish. I mean, since a kid, grew up in Hawaii, you do all this stuff. It's part of your life style. I swam with a shark last week.
That's pretty
cool. Yeah.
So leading to that, what's the one thing that makes you nervous?
The thing that makes you nervous is stress, I guess. I hate stress. I get very sometimes stressful with what we do. My kids being unsafe, I guess, makes me nervous. Family and so forth, not having that proper balance. That's another hard part of it all, is how do you balance family and business? You kind of feel like you have to make one suffer for if you want to succeed in business, and it's very a thin line that gets crossed a lot. You're gonna take away from family time, you're gonna take away to really succeed, and that makes me nervous.
That's a tough one. I'm in that stage where I feel like I'm growing so fast, and I got a family that's growing just as fast.
Yeah, it's you got definitely. A baby coming, man. Yeah. That's 1-2 years of your life is gone.
Yeah, and that's why I think getting up at 5 o'clock, my son get up at 7.
Yes.
Just getting a head start. So when I come home at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, can I hang try not to use that phone as much, you know. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm nervous about getting my first property, but I know once it's done, I'm going to be like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
Yeah. It's such a good feeling. And yeah, just keep pushing through that process. You can sell it later. You can refinance it later. You can rent it out. So don't be scared. You know, I would actually rent it out or house hack it if you can.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, Mike.
Because I mean, I live at home right now. So
yeah, I would look for something you can put a roommate in it or a house hack it, you know, or I would Airbnb it if, you know,
and then you don't, before, so
and then you don't have to pay the mortgage as well.
Yeah,
most definitely. If you go big, fourplex, if you can, if I can find a four, you know, that's like ideal.
You should buy a fourplex. Yeah, three fourplex.
I'd have to do FHA for that, but the loan I'm doing right now is like 1 to 2. So,
oh, okay.
Well, it could look like a 1 to 2, but you just cut it up or you close a door and, you know, you finagle it. You can rent out a room like dorm room style, you know, y'all the same kitchen. Get your buddies to rent your
door.
Yeah. Yeah. Get one of your buddies you grew up with. Like, here you go, bro. Here's a room for you. Pay me rent.
All right. So the old American dream would be you would be still an engineer, you know, working 8 to 8, grinding it out and retire. And then we'll talk to you about your retirement in 40 years.
Yeah.
That's the old American dream. What's your version of the new American dream?
Right now in our society, no one wants to work. Everyone wants everything now and to be financially free. So everyone wants to work. But work to me now is pretty cool. It's not a work anymore. I enjoy it. It's part of my life. It's not work. So that's what I think the dream should be, is where it's not feeling like work. It feels like whatever you're doing in life, you know, it feels like it's your passion. It's something that you're excited about and doesn't feel like I'm going to work. Doesn't feel like I have a job, you know.
I want the whole world. I don't know if there will be, but to experience that, because I'm in Florida. We got a hurricane coming. I don't know if y'all have seen what's here. Yeah, but
yeah.
I'm on the East Coast. It's over by Tampa. But everybody I talked to today, like, they closed school, they closed jobs, and everybody happy. And, you know, I got a moving business, and, you know, it wasn't that bad. And we went to work. It's like you look at it different when it's yours and you enjoy it. You know, like if I was at the post office, I would have been calling the hotline, please be closed, you know. But the fact that I love what I'm doing, you know, we were still out there moving and shaking because it's not like work. I enjoy it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Work's fun when you like doing it and when you're achieving your goals, I guess, too.
Most definitely. I think, I wouldn't want to ask you right now, but maybe I'll ask you. What would you say your hourly rate would be to get you to come do something? Like, I know
500. Yeah. Okay. The way I think of everything is you want to make $1 million a year. That's it's 84,000 a month, 7,000 a week, I think it is. So, or 7,000 a day, and it's like 400 something an hour. Yeah. So it's, I just use 500. It's $1 million a year. Yeah. So, and I think of that when I'm doing something, when I was on the flips and I was like helping put the grass in the yard, you know, is that I pay a guy $15 an hour. Am I valuing my time at $15 an hour, or can I be making more money doing something else? You know, so I always think of like, is what my time is valued?
No,
you know, a funny question I always get is, people want to buy me lunch. They want to buy me coffee. I'm like, you think, you know, lunch is $20, right? Do you think my time is valued at $20 for lunch? You don't think I can go buy my own lunch at $20? You know, so I always hate when people say, oh, I'll buy you lunch. I'm like, what? You think my time is raised $20? Like,
yeah. Now, and you look at it too, when you stop, like, now that I work for myself, I was making like $20 an hour as a mailman.
Yeah.
But now I look at it like, for me to go do something, I like, to me, it's like around $100 an hour, you know, and it seemed like a lot, but it's not really, because how much you can do in an hour now is crazy. Yeah, or that's what it rationally out to now, you know.
Yeah,
Yeah. Let the people know if they want to reach out, find more information, contact you. How can they do that?
Yeah, Indar Hawaii, I-N-D-A-R Hawaii, on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok. I don't know. I said everything. And everything's Indar Hawaii. Even you can go IndarHawaii.com and about investing with us. I'm actually looking for some investors right now. I really would love for anyone who needs a huge tax savings. We're buying a strip mall in Jensville, Wisconsin, a $6 million strip mall. It's a 12 cap, really good deal. And I need to raise $1.5 million to buy this strip mall, an Office Max and so forth. So looking for investors. So Indar Hawaii is my handle.
I will put it in the show notes. So that's definitely like the way to get in the game. You don't have to do no work, just put some money in. All the websites and tags in the show notes, but thank you. I think Mike gonna pay for this bill for this hour.
I hope you. I hope you get something, Mike. I hope you buy something. I really hope you do. And message me if you need help. I'll tell you my 2 cents.
I found this one property I'm trying to buy by the college I went to in South Jersey, and I went there and it needed so much work. Like there's a ton of water damage, but it was only $170,000. It was 6 bedrooms. Baths. It was like an old early 1900s house. They kept extending the back out, but it was an industrial zone. And I was like thinking, I was like, man, it was like too far. It was close to school, but it was like in the wrong direction. And then it was right by the train tracks too, which they didn't show on the MLS. But then I saw it was just pending the other day. I went and checked it out and I was like, I just couldn't see it. But then I was thinking someone saw it, the vision in it.
That's the hardest thing about real estate, especially when you start out. You're so stuck in, a lot of people want to flip and they only can want to do a condo. Condos are very easy flip to do, but then a great deal comes that you're scared of doing because it was outside your zone, your area. Like that's the hardest thing about real estate, is you have to just be outside your comfort zone to do things if you want to make money. And that's how I actually get bigger now. I just keep pushing my comfort zone. So that's outside of your comfort zone, it sounds like, but you would have made money.
Floor was like this in the house was sagging.
But if it was fixed up, it would have been worth $200,000-$300,000 maybe.
Yeah.
So you could have refinanced it.
I'm gonna check on it and see what happens to it.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's a good deal though, because that would happen to me too. I'll look at something and then it'll be available, and then next thing you know, it's pending. And one of the deals I just seen, it was a foreclosure. The lot was big enough to add another house. So the person fixed that house and also put another house on, like you separate the lots, you know?
Yeah.
So you got to be able to see the vision, I guess.
Yeah, I checked it out the day it was posted to MLS, because I was like, this thing's too cheap. And then when I got there, I saw the train tracks and like the water damage in the flooring. And then I was thinking, I don't know. It was too much for me to start off. That's what I was thinking.
Hard to do.
Obviously it's hard, but somebody's going to do the deal. Somebody's going to make the money. It's either you or somebody else. So best time to start is now.
Yeah. All right, Indar, thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate the knowledge and time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you guys. Message me if you ever need help. I love talking story.
Awesome.